it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hey, 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 you're on with Self-Reliance Exposed, brought to you by Backwoods Home Magazine. And as always, you have Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. How you doing, Colorado?
Good, man. How you been, bud?
Oh, yeah, busy, busy, busy. Like always. I mean, we say that kind of
we say that every week.
Yeah. But, you know, and we mention every week. I mean, we're getting ready for our expo, which is right around the corner. And I think I told you last week, I basically got a new job offer for a regular job. And so I've been getting prepared for that. It's just everything comes in at the same time.
It does.
I don't even know what to do anymore.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I have to ask you, I mean, it's been, you know, hovering around zero here for the last week. I know that up in Michigan where my office is, they had a big snowstorm. How's the weather been in Colorado?
Perfect.
That's what I heard.
Yep. It is. Not to rub it in, hate to pour salt on the wound there, but yeah, it's just been great. I mean, it's not quite shorts weather. A couple days ago, it was almost shorts weather. Yeah, it's beautiful here.
I mean, what's the deal? It's typically you guys get the horrible weather, and you know.
Well, that's the secret. That's why we don't tell anybody. We don't get horrible weather. If Colorado has 300 sunny days a year, when it does snow, the sun comes out the next day and it's melted. I mean, that's the beauty of Colorado. Unless you're living up by the 14ers, you know, up in the mountains. But living out here on the Front Range, it's just perfect.
Really?
Yep.
So, I mean, what are we talking? When you're saying perfect, were we talking 50s, 60s?
Yeah, right now it's 50, looks like 53. So, yeah, it's a little cold today. Yesterday was in the 60s, and the day before that was like 67, 68. Oh, excuse me, which was perfect. So, again, you know, I mean, I was actually driving with the windows down and just enjoying the day. It was beautiful, sunny, and you could see the mountains and the snow tops in the background, and it was gorgeous. It was
now,
perfect.
I just don't get this. You know, Texas, where we're from,
yep.
You know, it's in the 70s, and you know, we've been lucky and have had a fairly mild winter last year and this year since we've moved up to Iowa. And it just seems like my life is pushing me towards cruddier and cruddier weather. So we move up to Iowa, and you know, I think today is going to hit a high of 10. And you know, last night was a low of like -2. And today is supposed to be, I think, like I said, maybe we'll hit a high of 12 or something like that. And then tonight will be 4 degrees. But we haven't had any snow or precipitation. And then on Sunday I head to Michigan, and you know, they've got like 5 days of snow planned. So
no.
Yeah. Well, at least they did. I mean, it might have changed now, but they've had nothing but snow and ice showers.
Yeah, we do get our weather. I mean, we've been down like last winter. And this is usually about when it starts getting bad for us. It's usually February. Last winter there was like 2 or 3 days where we were in the, you know, -10, -20 degrees. But that's really, really rare. And again, it was 2 or 3 days and it was gone, and it was back up to, you know, 50s and 60s. So, that just doesn't happen very often here.
Well, and the reason I'm mentioning weather and where you move and things like that is. We're going to be doing an interesting show today, but even after this show, we're going to be starting a series coming up. And so let's talk about today's show. Today we'll be talking with Marjorie Wildcraft again. Now, people know we've had Marjorie on every once in a while, and Marjorie is the creator of Grow Your Own Groceries.
Yep.
And fantastic woman, has done fantastic stuff down in Texas. She's a Texas homegirl. And, you know, and one of the things that she gets asked a lot is, you know, how do you find the perfect survival retreat or farm or homestead? And, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot, and that's actually one of the reasons you created the little thing
homestead.
That we do, Homestead Hunters.
Yep,
and, exactly. And so when she came to me and said that she was putting out a book called How to Find the Perfect Survival Retreat Farm or Homestead, and, you know, wouldn't mind talking about some of the tricks and tips and everything else that she gives people, I said, this is a good way to start the year.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people, we moved from Texas up to Iowa in the winter, you know, just right before winter came up. A lot of people, you know, look at moving when they're smart at the end of the school year, but they start looking around this time. And, you know, so my thought was, since people are probably getting it in their head, the tax thing is all over the place. I mean, I have so many people that are telling me that every check they get has less money, and they were kind of surprised how much money was coming out of their taxes. I mean, how much taxes were coming out of their money. I wish it was the other way around. You know, people are going to start looking at ways to conserve. And it's kind of funny because just recently you had said, I think it was last episode, that even you were like, I might move to Texas.
Exactly. I thought about it. I'm sure thinking about it. Especially with the, you know, we talked about the gun laws and all that stuff. And that was kind of one of the big factors in it for me.
And then one of our good friends, Jack Spearco, was, and again, fellow Texan. Man, there's a lot of us, aren't there?
There are.
fellow Texan moved out of Texas and found what his retreat/farmstead. And what is he doing this year? He's moving back to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I thought this was a good way to lead into this year, just for the simple reason a lot of people don't necessarily think things through when they're looking for it, and end up back where they were, or at least spending a lot more money and being unhappy because they don't plan things properly.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, and I mean, I don't know if you want to share it, but you had that experience. You moved up to a stead at one point, and you can tell us a little bit about what happened and everything else, only to decide that it was too far out for you and wasn't what you were looking for and move back, correct?
That is correct. I mean, it was what we call the world's most expensive summer family vacation.
Well, tell us a little bit about it so people can kind of relate.
Yeah. We lived here in Colorado and decided that we wanted to move someplace where the land was cheaper and our money could go further. I was selling my company, and so I sold the company, and we thought we were going to retire. So we bought what we thought was the dream home, 6,000 square feet house on, you know, I think it was like 30-40 acres. Had a pond, had the tree-lined winding driveway, had everything that you could imagine in your head. I mean, people would come up to the house and ask if they could take their family photos in front of the house for Christmas cards and things like that. So, you know, it was what we thought the perfect home. And we lived there for 6 months. In those 6 months, we realized that our dream and reality were not the same. luckily, as most of my friends will always say, they don't know how I do this, but luckily I was able to get out of the deal, sell the house, move back to Colorado, and it cost me a total of $1,000 by the time it was all said and done.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing that you were able to flip it.
Yeah. So the thing is the, you know, we moved out there, we had 40 acres. The problem with 40 acres is if you're not using the 40 acres is you still have to maintain the 40 acres. And so at the time, we weren't using it yet. We were still trying to get our feet under us. We got some chickens. We had the coop set up and the fencing and did all that. Bottom line, we realized that after 6 months that we were still only using about an acre of the land around the house. And the other 40 acres was just nothing but time-wasting maintenance for us. You know, we were having to clean the pond and get all the trees out of the pond and trim up the trees all around the acreage and fix the fence and do all this and that. And it was constant work and cutting down the grass and, you know, then anyway, so long story short, it, you know, what we thought was our dream, when in reality, once we got there and lived it, realized that's not what we wanted. And so we moved back to Colorado.
Right. And again, it's a classic example. And I was lucky, because I met Colorado Ron right before I moved up to Iowa. And that story, between that story and my wife's concern about going from downtown city suburb to the country, it actually kept us from buying a big farm and doing it. And we live in a little town with, you know, a total of 5 acres between all the little properties around us to utilize. And that was, you know, and even that's a lot to maintain.
Yeah.
Yeah, Colorado Ron told this story when we were sitting one night, and after I had first met him, and I'm just like, that could easily be me, because everything I was looking at was like 30 to 100 acres.
Yeah.
And I was glad that I didn't do it. I was glad we took the baby step and moved into this little town, and well, we're actually on the outskirts, but still in a little town, as opposed to buying a big acreage and trying to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, and the huge benefit for your situation versus my situation is we knew nobody. You are actually lucky enough to move. You're moving back to family, and us, we had nobody there. So, I mean, the only friends we had were ones we met at church on Sundays, and it was kind of a culture shock for us, and it was tough to. It was tough to see eye to eye on a lot of things, just because they thought differently than we did. And, I was still used to the fast pace, get things done kind of mentality, and they were just a lot slower. So there's a lot of differences there, but I'm glad it's working out for you. Again, my family's all in Colorado, so it makes it tough. Moving out again, I think that's the main thing for us as family.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, you know, I was just offered and took this position with my current company, a promotion, and the first thing they wanted me to do was actually uproot my family and move them to Michigan. And, you know, I had looked at that Homestead Hunter from like 4 or 5 weeks ago. And I was like, well, I already know a place that if it's, you know, still available, we can move to. But, you know, just what you said right there, moving is not just moving yourself and trying to do this. When you move your family, it affects not only you but everybody in your current family. And if you don't have a support system, it's that much more stressful.
Right. And don't get me wrong, it can be done. But, you know, again, it is that much stress, you know, that much more stressful. We have 6 kids, and so if anybody is feeling the stress, they pass it on to the next sibling. You know what I mean? And so it kind of has this wave effect, you know, and can be contagious.
No, I agree, and I think that was a big thing stopping me from doing anything. Where my wife and the kids have a support system here. And it's not like, you know, when we lived in Texas, we didn't have any support system. So it's not like, like you said, it can't be done. It's just, it amplifies everything. And so, you know, I think hopefully through this episode, and, you know, people will consider there are a lot more variables than you think about. It's not just, can I find a large piece of property? Does it have water? You know, what can I do? Is it, you know, there's so many variables outside the purchase of the property that play into the whole thing.
Yep, I agree.
So, on that note, before we give Miss Marjorie a call, let's talk about this week's Homestead Hunter. So,
okay,
it's kind of funny. You have this Texas theme going on right now.
I do. Can you tell?
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this property in White Right.
Okay, the one in White Right. is I don't know. I'm sure you've been through there. I like that little area.
Oh, White Rice Night area. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So this one is a historical home. They call it a vintage home in the small town of White Rice. It's 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath. What I love about it is the master is the main floor master. I also like that it has gas cooking in the kitchen. And it sits on 2.3 acres. So it's not quite 3 acres, but it is priced at $119,000. The house itself is 2,252 square feet, and it was built in the 1900 itself. So I like the area. It's just outside of town there. It's a nice little spread if you look at the aerial map. It's surrounded by some trees and fields, and all the homes around there look like they have, you know, I don't know, sitting on at least a half acre or more. So it's kind of nice. I don't know. I like this one. What do you think? I like the tin roof too, the metal roof.
Yeah.
And the big porch.
Yeah, I was just going to mention the tin roof. So the house is a traditional Texas ranch-style house. I don't know if it's a wraparound, but it's a big front, full front porch that faces south. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. Like you said, Colorado Ron said, metal roof. I love that. I'm actually going to put a metal roof on a couple of buildings up here. It's not practical up north, but it looks good. I mean, to me, it's a classic look. So I also like all the wood that they've done in this place. They've done a great job restoring the floors. The floors are all wood. Another thing is that these old traditional ranch-style houses built in the 1900s in Texas have really big open family areas. So if you look at the dining room or you look at the kitchen's got a big center island that everybody can sit around with a lot of walking space around that. And a lot of this is because when these houses were designed north-south, they have windows on both sides, and it was because when they were built, they didn't have air conditioning. And so it was designed so you could open windows on both sides and have the air flow through, and bigger rooms allowed for the rooms not to heat up so fast. And so I like all the big open space of these old places.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to find them with the big open spaces. A lot of them still have the rooms, you know, and the smaller rooms. And that's one thing my wife doesn't like about older homes is, you know, it's like a whole bunch of different rooms.
Yeah, I agree. And my favorite feature that would be very important to me, although we don't have it currently in our house here, is the dual vanities.
Oh yeah, uh-huh.
Because I hate sharing the sink space with my wife. Yeah,
or trying to get sink space from your wife.
Yeah, exactly. So it has two sinks and gorgeous woodwork with the sinks on top and their individual mirrors and everything else. The bathroom seems very, very well done.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And even the second bathroom has a tub.
An old
metal clawfoot tub, which is really cool. So no, I think it's a wonderful house, and the price is right, $119,000 for this place.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's not. Let's see here. That's one thing I didn't zoom out on the map to see exactly how far it is from town.
Oh, it's about it's probably about an hour north of downtown Dallas.
Okay. Yeah. There.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, it, give or take.
Yeah. So to get you to the airport is probably what 40-45 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, that's probably right. If I remember correctly, it's straight up 75. It's like between Plano and Sherman.
Yep. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's an hour with traffic to downtown Dallas. And may not even be that long to get to the airport because, you know, you don't have to actually go into town. Most people don't realize the airport's actually not in Dallas.
Right.
it's outside, and 121 cuts across, because I used to live off 121. So, you know, basically you would come down 75, take 121, and shoot across through Louisville and everything else and go to the airport. So it's probably not that long. It's probably maybe 25, 30 minutes to the airport.
Great.
So,
yeah,
you just
that's
have this
a good
thing.
One.
Yeah, it is a nice one. I mean, it's nicer than the one last week. I'm still not a Northern Texas Dallas fan, but... I mean,
well, I was looking down by Austin and stuff, but they were all the ones that in the price range were like mobile homes. And, I do have something against mobile homes, but
yeah,
I just don't, that's not what we're looking for. So, I've lived in mobile homes, so, you know, whatever, but, you know, people that stand up and want to say, hey, there's nothing wrong with mobile homes, but there is plenty wrong with mobile homes. So I that's not what we're looking for, especially when it's going to be a long-term homestead.
Right. And you know something? I know people that use them as long-term homesteads. It's more, it really depends on what you're looking for. A mobile home will function better for a individual or a couple than someone like you with six kids.
Yeah.
You know, they're just not overly functional for large families. There's nowhere to grow in them, and then
you can't expand them. You can't, it's just tough. They're not on a foundation. There's lots of problems, animals getting underneath them. There's a ton of problems with a mobile home. Again, I've lived in them, and I'd live in one again if the right circumstances applied. But at this point, I'm not looking for one, and that would not be my first option, though.
No, I would agree. But again, this is a wonderful house. It's amazing. I like the house. I wish it had a little bit more property, but that being said,
It's really hard that close to Dallas to have that much property and still be under our price limit.
No, that's true. Although White Right seems to have quite a few. After you did that, I looked at a couple others, and there was like another one out there that was like a four-bedroom, four-bath that was like at $169,000.
Right.
Again, above our price range, but it was on like 5.5 acres.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them that are just right there, and I could fudge the rules a little bit and get them there, but I tried my best to stay. If you've noticed on most of them, I usually don't even hit the 150 mark. I really try to stay below that, around the 100, the 120 and lower is where I try to stay.
No, and that's good. All right, well, so I think that's good for this week, and hopefully next week you'll find something outside of Texas. You're starting to make me want to get back to Texas. Getting a little homesick here.
Yeah, I'll look. I think I'm going to do Colorado next year.
Next week, whatever.
Next month.
Year. Yeah, that's a long ways off, but that's all right. So before we go ahead and take a quick break and then come back and call Marjorie, I want to talk about the series we want to do. Starting next week, guys, and probably for the next 6 weeks, every one of our guests, when we have them on, we're going to concentrate on prepping for spring. Now, I've been reading a lot of the current magazines, Mother Earth News and everything else. They come in at the beginning of every month, and everybody does their pledges, at the beginning of the year. We're still in January, so, we're just 25 days, from New Year's. And, everybody does their pledges for the new year. And there was an article written about prepping fear. And one of the things was the people talking about how they want to get into prepping, but what ends up happening is they get frozen with fear at how monumental the task seems once spring hits and they have to get started, and there's so many things to do. And I've been a victim of it, and we talked about it on this show when we talked about last year, how I got overwhelmed when it came to the garden. You know, it was like ripping all the area up, you know, making sure that it was ready, getting everything in, you know, and then next thing I knew, it was like planting season had already gone by me, and I was just like, wow, I just didn't get anything done. And then once that happened, every other task seemed to be that much more, you know, that much harder, and I just, you know, it killed my list to about maybe I got 15% of what I wanted to get done last year done. And the article made a very good point that prepping doesn't start when spring hits. I mean, although you're there's no reason why you can't plan for spring and be working on things here as we come towards the tail end of winter. We have about 3 months left for a lot of us, and start getting things ready now. That doesn't mean you're going to be out tilling the ground, although Colorado Ron may be able to with his weather.
I actually could, but yeah. I hate to rub it in.
But there are things they can do. You can do ahead of time. For example, Colorado Ron, if you go to his Facebook page, did a fantastic job putting up raised beds last year.
Yeah.
And that's something you could do if the weather was reasonable, 40s and 50s. You could get out there and get done.
Right. Actually, you should be getting that done, especially if you're going to be, you know, using manure or something like that in your beds.
Well, exactly. And that was one of the things that was the advice that they had given was, although it may be too cold, you can't put chicken manure or cow manure directly into your plants. And so you maybe want to start mixing that stuff up with dirt so it's not so hot.
Yep.
And hot being that the chemicals and everything and bacteria have all died off prior to putting them in your flower beds.
Right. And it'll actually get so hot it'll burn the seed.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's kind of the thought for the next couple of weeks is we'll be talking to Charles Sanders and Jackie Clay and hearing from each one of them some things that they do and some things that you can do in the audience to get prepared for spring. Start doing stuff now.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good couple of episodes. And you kind of work that way already. You're always in prepping mode, Colorado.
I am. It's terrible. I don't know. It's a disease, I guess. I went down to this week, real quick, I went down to the store that I usually go to, and they were out of some of the stuff that I buy. And I'm like, what? Where's it at? And he's like, he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, we can't have that stuff in the store anymore because you stock up and you buy it all. And you don't let anybody else buy it.
So you're being punished.
He was joking, of course. But, yeah, so his shipment didn't come in, so I got to wait till next week. But he's got smoking deals on canned meat all the time, and so I love buying canned meat.
Now, do you do pre-prepping? Do you and your wife do pre-prepping, like, outside? Do you start getting – now, again, for those of you guys who may be new, but if not, Colorado Ron lives in the suburb. So
I do.
Mm-hmm. It's not like with me where I've got to go over and till, you know, 2 acres of land, you know, to get it prepared. He's doing everything in his yard. So do you do stuff to prepare during the winter?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we did it last fall and got our boxes ready, so they're ready to go as soon as we're confident that the weather will stay. You know, because you know, even though the weather is nice today, it doesn't mean it's going to be nice tomorrow or next week. And so we don't want to plant too soon and end up with a big freeze. And so we're ready for that time. And when it's when it's time to do it, we'll go ahead and pull the trigger on it. But right now, it's just not ready yet.
Now, do you do starters?
Yeah. No. We do it from seed. We do everything from seed.
So, I mean, when do you plant? Do you do, like, I know a lot of people plant their seeds and keep them indoors and get the plant started.
That's what we do.
Move them out.
Yeah. You've been to our house. You know, the kitchen counter right there between the kitchen and the dining room table next to the big window. We set everything there and get it going, get it started.
And how early do you do that?
Actually, my wife's talking about doing it this week. So.
Okay. So, again, here you are. You're still in winter, and you're getting your prep work done.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, awesome. So, like I said, I think what we'll do is, guys, we'll pick. You know, we'll announce what the topics are going to be for each one. Because some of these people, like especially like Jackie Clay, she's so diverse, she could pretty much answer anything.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great.
Yep, definitely. All right. So let's go ahead and take our first commercial break, and then when we come back, we will try giving Marjorie a call. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll talk to you guys right after this commercial.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo. This family-friendly event focuses on traditional values and long-forgotten skills. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
The Self-Reliance Expo is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money. Save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo, coming soon. Find out more by going to SelfRelianceExpo.com. That's SelfRelianceExpo.com.
Hi, this is J. Stephen Stoller for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you like the program you're listening to right now, consider subscribing to Backwoods Home Magazine. Call 1-800-835-2418 or go to www.backwoodshome.com and click on the subscribe button. Every issue of Backwoods Home Magazine is over 100 pages, packed with solid self-reliance advice by experts who tell you how to survive in these unpredictable times. Call 1-800-835-2418. 2418.
All right, guys, you're back with Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. All right, Colorado, let's give Marjorie Wildcraft a call. How's that sound?
All right.
Now, hopefully she will. If you remember last time, her phone died right in the middle of the rabbit conversation.
I do. I remember that now. Yeah.
I spent 4 hours editing that show.
Oops.
Yeah, it was funny because I think that we joked around on the show about it. It had like the most complications like ever. We tried calling her two other times and she didn't pick up. And
yeah.
Then we called her cell phone and she didn't pick up. And then we called her cell phone. She goes, "Can you call back on my landline?" So, all right. It was just pretty funny. Hi, Marjorie. This is Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
How's it going?
It's going awesome. It's really going well.
Well, good, good. So we were just talking to everybody, and we were telling them that that was very interesting that you had contacted me and said that you were releasing your new e-book, The 7 Shortcuts to Finding the Perfect Survival Retreat. And we thought it was the perfect time to go ahead and have this conversation because a lot of people – are start looking at the beginning of the year for places to potentially move when school gets out.
It's a big conversation, yeah, and it's a fun one to have, but you're right. And, you know, people, I think in general, the whole, and I'm glad to see it, but there's the whole preparedness mindset starting to become a mainstream thing.
Now, how long ago was it that you went and looked for your property that you live on now in Texas?
Actually, it was just a little more than a decade ago. And when we were looking for this property, we still had a really big business in Austin. And one of our criteria that we were in the process of unwinding, and one of the criteria that we had was that the property not be more than an hour's drive from Austin, just so that it would be realistic to set it up while we dismantled that other business. And then we knew that it was going to take us about 2 years to dismantle the other business, which was, I was a professional money manager. We used to invest in real estate, and we had, you know, partnerships with all kinds of houses and condominiums and stuff like that. And it took us, we knew it was going to take a while to unwind. So that was our criteria at the time.
Now, how many places do you think you looked at before you settled on the one that you finally moved to?
I would say, gosh, somewhere in the range of 50 to 100, somewhere in there, you know, a lot. And it, you know, it was quite a few months of driving and looking at regions and, you know, Central Texas has a very, very diverse set of bioregions. You go west, you got the hill country, and we nixed that off right away just because we knew the growing wasn't going to be nearly as good as going east where there's going to be more rainfall and better soil. But it took us quite a few visits to different properties and looking around and talking to people before we made that, before we had that realization. So it's a pretty big process. It really is.
Yeah, it sounds like you put a lot of time into that. The, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, like for me, for instance, if I wanted to move and move to relocate to Texas, I mean, obviously, I can't go look at 50 to 100 properties and still live in Colorado. You know what I mean? And so,
I do know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes it a little bit tougher.
Well, you know, and we have, believe it or not, I don't think Google Earth existed back then.
Yeah. That's one of my best friends, that's for sure.
You know, the internet is just astonishing. We've been living in this dream. We don't realize how incredible the technological changes and things that we have available just in 10 years. And now at this point, now that our business is not as tied to a specific location, I would actually be more interested in even being further away from population and looking at another place. And I've, since we set this up and got it going, I thought, you know, I really would like to live in a place with more water and that does have less population density. And so I've been traveling extensively, over the last 5 years at least, and looking and visiting other places and saying, is it going to be easier here, or what are the challenges here, or, you know, what are the communities like here, everywhere that I go, mostly throughout the United States. And I'm going to tell you, it's a very, very arduous process because it's not just you as an individual. You know, usually somebody in the family is saying, hey, I know there are changes coming and we've got to prepare. And then there's going to be the spouse who says, look, life is just fine, you know. There's no problems, really. Okay, yeah, there might be some problems. But you got the beans, don't worry. And why did you buy so many guns? And then my case, there's kids. Hey, Mom, I got all my friends here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to go anywhere for spring break because I don't want to be away from my friends, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You may move somewhere else, you know.
Exactly. So you have been looking. Have you been looking outside of the state of Texas or just inside?
Oh, all over. I mean, we've been Idaho, Utah, Oregon, Northern California, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, you know, the whole Southern Rockies area. Then all throughout the Ozarks, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, to some extent Kansas. Some explorations up in the Appalachians area. And for a while I toured with the idea of Maine, which actually has a lot of really good things going on for it. But then one day, and it was in January, they were announcing the weather in Maine. It was 30 degrees below zero.
Yep.
And it dawned on me that below zero was like, you know, freezing is at 32, and below zero is like way below freezing. And I said, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah.
But Maine has, and I want to get up to Maine to visit it. I've been in contact with a lot of preppers up there, and that's there's a lot going on in Maine. And if you're a cold hardy soul, that's definitely an area to consider.
Well, we actually have a couple of our writers that are from up there, and believe it or not, correct me if I'm wrong, Colorado. They actually said it's not as cold as people would think.
Out on that peninsula.
Yeah, out on the peninsula, out by the coast, they said it's really not that bad.
It's the inland, the main part of like and Bangor and stuff like that. That's where it gets really cold. But he says that the warm waters that come up there in the winter, if you're out on the peninsula and you're surrounded by that, but again, you have to be out there on that peninsula in order to stay. But he says, once you go, you know, 40 miles west in the Bangor area, and you're freezing cold again. So you're kind of like on this little island of goodness.
Yeah, I also tend to not want to be that close to the ocean or, you know, sea level. So there's another concern there. I don't know how much of a concern that is, but I'll have to maybe I'll even I like I said, I want to go to Maine. I've been invited to speak at MOFGA, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. And you know, for being such a little tiny state, and this is one of the indications of why Maine is so good, they have the biggest, most well funded, most well organized Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association is huge up there with tons of resources, and it's an indication that you've got a population that are, you know, growing food and working with livestock and managing forests and doing all the things that you would want to be able to do.
So since you've been looking all over, what are some of the spots that interest you the most?
Well, for me personally, I'll tell you, there's like four criteria that I often look at and say to people when they're looking at where do they want to be. And, you know, population, and there's four, you know, you want to look at your biggest threats and fears to kind of help you pick a region. And there's four big categories of that. And one is population. You know, humans, too many humans are you know, we just got to face it, they're a threat. You know, in a collapse situation, we're talking about resources not being nearly as abundant, and the two big things that kill human beings basically in large quantity historically have been famine and disease, and both of those are exacerbated in areas with high population density. So there's just this natural tendency to want to get away from the large crowds. The second thing that I consider a big problem, and it is becoming much more so aware, is nuclear. The nuclear power plants, most of them in the United States, are using cooling pools to store their waste material. A lot of them were built in the 70s and 80s, so they've got decades of waste material. And that in itself is not necessarily an issue, but if anything happens to where those pools aren't kept cool, you have a steam explosion, which will spew up all that radioactive material. It might as well be a nuclear explosion. So you don't really want to live, you know, too close to one of those, you know.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
You know, there's like 108 million people in the United States that live within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant. So in my mind, that's the second biggest thing you want to stay away from. The third thing is natural disasters. So every area has natural disasters, you know. You get the tornado alley up in the Midwest, which is now sort of moving eastward, and you got the hurricanes on the East Coast. You've got the volcanoes in the Pacific Northwest area, and, of course, you've got earthquakes on the West Coast, and you've got drought throughout the West and the Southwest. And the key to dealing with that issue is to find the one that you're most comfortable living with. It's going to happen no matter where you are. You know? and that's true. You know, I just drought for me. One of the things I've discovered living here in Texas is drought is you can definitely live in areas that are droughty. I mean, there's just things that you do. And people have survived. You know, there have been indigenous peoples that have lived throughout the Southwest for millennia. But for me personally, I grew up in South Florida, and I'm used to green and lush and moist, and it just really irritates me. The drought is something that I personally have an issue with. So looking at the reality of the region that you're in and what the natural disasters are is the third thing. And then the fourth thing is the climate, and that's, can you handle the heat? I'm totally fine in 100-degree weather. I mean, I know what to do about that, and I'm comfortable with that and used to it. Put me 30 degrees below and I'm not, you know, I just don't function there. My husband has flatly told me we are not going anywhere where there's more than 2 feet of snow here, you know, and I think, okay, we got that as a family. That's one of our criteria. So those are the four things. And for our family, where we're leaning toward is something that's, you know, in the southern region. So, and I like the Ozarks a lot. The Southern Rockies also have a lot of appeal in some of the Four Corners area, and then also Southern Oregon, Northern California are areas that we really like a lot. And as you know, some of the other areas that exist, Jim Rawls up there in Northern Idaho is declaring the American Redoubt area and drawing a lot of people that are preparing up there. And I haven't actually been to Northern Idaho yet. That's on my checklist of, like, I absolutely have to do that just to check it out and see the soils and see the growth rates and visit some of the towns that he's talking about and visit with the community. There's lots of people up there that seem very happy with that lifestyle. So there's definitely regions that are emerging that are known for preppers and for people gathering.
Interesting.
Now, Colorado, Ron, I assume you're in the Southern Rockies somewhere then?
I'm actually just north of Denver. I'm up in northern Colorado. I'm probably about 40 minutes from Wyoming border.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you're in northern Colorado. You know, the thing that I love whenever we go anywhere, everybody goes, this is the banana belt of, you know, like Colorado. And actually, the Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute, which is near Glenwood Springs, they do have a greenhouse where they have bananas growing in it. But, you know, boy, the phrases that people give things are so misleading. Believe me, nowhere in Idaho that bananas are going to grow.
Exactly. Banana belt. Yeah, we hear that a lot in different places. And you are right. The bottom line is you really have to go. You know, you could do all the research you want online, just like we did. You know, I made one flight to Missouri, looked at, you know, I spent 3 days out there, looked at, 40 different homes, made the choice, and flew back. That was it. All the other research we did was online. Then when we got there, then we realized that, you know, the soil stunk, you know, different things. You know, so there's different problems that we were not aware of and we didn't do our due diligence on. So you're absolutely right. And to see it for yourself is hands down the best way to do it.
It is, and it's hard to do that with everything, but and you're right, and then yeah, the Ozarks, they do have the challenge of not really having a lot of soil, although they've got a much milder climate than a lot of other places, and they've got a lot of water, so
right,
you know, there's that, but it's astonished me time and time again, going, oh, I think this little area is going to be perfect, you know, and then we go there and we're like, oh dear.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can almost know, actually, within about, you know, 10 minutes of being in a place, you're like, oh, no.
Yep, exactly. You know, I've known a couple of people that have moved from Texas to the Northern California area and love it.
There's a lot going on there. Now, Southern Oregon, historically, was like, that was the place for all the preppers and the survivalists. The survivalist community has been changing a lot over the decades, and it used to only be very, you know, very conservative, Republican, deep Christian. I'm not trying to offend anybody or go into too many stereotypes.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of people saying now, you know, oh my God, and Rawls has definitely said this, that, you know, Oregon on the western side and Northern California has become way too liberal for the classical survivalist stereotype. You know, they hate it now. Personally, I tend to be more of a middle-of-the-road type person, and I like the Northern California, Southern Oregon area with the influence of more of the hippie culture, I guess you'd call it. And there's they also have there's a bunch of towns and counties there that have constitutional sheriffs, which I think is huge. Are you familiar with the constitutional sheriffs?
Huh? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. They're I was only recently made aware of them, but yeah, there's quite a few of them up there.
I think that's real important. And basically, these are you know, men in office that are saying, we are going to defend your Second Amendment rights regardless of what the federal government says, and we, you know, if the federal government says we are going to, you know, impose, you know, we're going to round up all the guns, we're going to not abide by that because it's your Second Amendment right to hold it. And if you've got, you know, the police siding with you on that particular issue, I think it's a real good thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's, yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, you have a good thing going there in Texas, too. I mean, they seem to be standing up pretty strong down there in Texas.
Texas is good, and I'm really pretty happy where we are. I'm just one of those, the grass is always greener on the other side types.
Yeah,
and
always looking. Yeah, same here.
Yeah, and the challenge, I'm always interested in the challenge. I did a couple of lengthy research trips down to Costa Rica because I thought, I'm addicted to chocolate.
Yeah,
and I want to live sustainably.
Yeah.
So let's go to Costa Rica.
Yeah. I actually looked down there. I looked down there a bunch myself. That's funny that you did that. Where did you? What part did you look around in?
I focused more on the southern part, partly because in the northern part, the land was divided, and it had a lot of very large landowners within a scattering of small landowners, and I felt that politically and socially there was going to be a schism between the haves and the have-nots when your land ownership is divided that way. And in the southern part, it was more just most of the people were small farmers, and it was just mostly a collection of small farms. So I felt that there would be more of an egalitarian type. And it's also the southern part is much less touristy, and there tended to be, Costa Rica's got a lot going on everywhere, but there tended to be a lot more focus on sustainability and organic and permaculture and more of the things that I was interested in. So
yeah.
And the northern part where your retirees from the United States.
No, I agree. And so are you still currently interested in Costa Rica, or did you check that one off the list?
I got to say I'm interested in everything all the time, so that grass is always greener thing. But, one big awakening I did have, and I've been an expat and I've lived overseas. I was based in Hong Kong for 7 years and traveling throughout Southeast Asia for work. And I had a ball. I just had a great time, really loved the Asian people, and I was an engineer at that point in my life, and just having a lot of fun. And when I went to Costa Rica, so my experience of living overseas has always been that it was a wonderful thing and generally good, and I don't mind being a foreigner in a foreign land. But in Costa Rica, there was very much a sense of, regardless of what your financial situation was, you were a rich American. And, I started to realize there was going to be some, and also they're very, very socially, very close-knit, a lot of family stuff. You're born in Costa Rica, your life is pretty much, you're booked with weddings and birthdays and, graduations for the rest of your life with just your family members. And, breaking into that is a little bit more difficult there if you wanted to get to know the Ticos. So that, and I know we've talking to a lot of people on the ground, they're not as, they've got a real big ecological image, and when you look underneath that very much, it's not as true as you would hope it would be. The President Arias was, selling off rights to forests, and there was things going on that anytime you look in any area, there's going to be stuff. That my husband and we had friends that spent a lot of time there, and the husband was saying, as a white male, you're going to be hit up all the time by women who are thinking you're there for that, because that's, it's a young man's playground for a lot of Americans, and it got very tiresome for him. He found that very annoying.
So
some guys might not, but you're married and got kids, you're kind of done with that, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
But so it started to add up to being, not quite the paradise we had thought. And then my family was just, no way, we don't speak Spanish, we're not going to learn. This is a great place to visit, but Mom, you're insane. So I backed off of that one.
Yeah. No, I completely understand.
The tropics, too, food, it is true that fruit grows everywhere and just falls off the trees, rotten and uneaten. And it is true there. You can have, you know, everybody talks about a one-acre cow, having a cow on 1 acre of land, and that's just dang near impossible in most of the United States. But it really is true in Costa Rica. You can have 1 acre and have a cow just because it rains so much and the grass grows so much.
Uh-huh.
But they do have, you know, a lot of other problems. There's too much rain. It doesn't get cold enough that some of the vegetables we really like to eat don't really grow very well there. With not having a freeze on occasion, you have a whole new world of insects and fungus and bacteria that is not an issue in the United States. So there are some other challenges you might not think about initially in terms of food production. And in my mind, you know, food production is really the core. And if we're talking about a totally collapsed scenario, yes, we've all got our backup food supplies, but at some point in time, most of our lives are going to be focused on growing food, which is historically, you know, what we do as humans, and that's the biggest task. So
right.
My question is always is how much easier is it to grow food here?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you know, I've also, you know, so it's funny that we it's funny that we've all kind of, I bet we're not the only one. Obviously, we can't be the only ones that have looked at all these different places. One of the places that I liked was first of all was Texas, and then second of all was because the one thing I can't handle, I just don't like, is the heat, and that's part of the reason that I moved from Texas was the heat and the droughts. I do like Idaho. And have you visited Idaho yet?
I've spent a good bit of time in southern Idaho and in central Idaho. There's a primitive skills gathering that I love to go to in outside of Rexburg, and I've spent quite a bit of time in that area. And also in southern Idaho, I've got a lot of friends there. So they were saying, come live in our community. And I
came the Banana Belt.
Yeah, the Banana Belt. And I've driven through quite a bit of it, you know. Boise is just a delightful little town, and there's the big deal in all of the West is water, and there's quite a few springs. The really interesting thing I thought, you know, if you were going to live in Idaho or even southern Canada up there, which is another possibility, I haven't done a lot of exploring up there, but certainly considered it, I thought a great strategy, if you're going to live in the North, other than food production, the other big chore you're going to have is keeping yourself warm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, cutting down trees now with a chainsaw, it's already worked for us now with a chainsaw, right?
Right.
And we all know how reliable chainsaws are. My God, that thing is breaking all the time. So, you know, if we got down into a collapse situation where we're actually having to cut wood by hand,
yeah.
Heaven help us. And so, you know, that's a huge amount of time and energy that would need to go into keeping yourself warm. And so I thought, you know, what the great strategy, there are a lot of hot springs on private land in Idaho. And I thought, now that would be the way to do Idaho. Get a piece of property that had a hot spring or a warm spring. That way, you know, your heating issue is taken care of. You can heat greenhouses, grow year-round. You know, your home is heated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but finding one of those is, sheesh. Seems
yeah,
like
we just got to play the lottery a little bit more, right? You know?
Yeah, cheap and Christmas. Man, it would be nice to find one, though, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's go through some things here. You know, one of the things that people often wonder, and I'm kind of in the same boat I'm lucky enough, I guess, that I can work mobily, so I don't have to be I don't have to go to an office every day. My office is at the house here. So, you know, my number one criteria for work is it has to have high speed internet. I have to have an area that has high speed internet, and so that right there cuts out a lot of areas.
Does it? No, I've talked to people the pros and cons, and have you found that none of the satellite services are reliable or anything?
I personally think the satellite services suck. I'm sorry, you guys that say satellite services for business, they're terrible. I had to watch some training videos one time, and I was watching these training videos, and I was on satellite, because that's all we could get in the Ozarks down there, and they kicked me down to dial-up speed the next day because they said I exceeded my bandwidth limit. And I only watched like 4 videos in one day.
Yeah, I think but on something like that, again, I think each person has to kind of assess what they need it for. I mean, if you're not going to be watching videos or sending photographs or things like that, large files, on a regular basis, satellite works fine. But how long ago was that, Colorado?
I guess it's been, 3-4 years ago now.
Okay. Because, I mean, the other thing is everybody has dropped their bandwidth constraints. I mean, it used to be that you were metered, and so you did have a bandwidth limitation, but satellite no longer has that. So, I mean, even cell phones used to have bandwidth, limitations, and a lot of them have dropped it.
But so. the other thing you got to remember, though, also, is that satellite is not – you're not downloading that video. Even though I watch those videos, I usually had to start the video, pause it, go get myself something to drink, and while it downloaded. It's not the high-speed internet that most people are used to.
Huh. Yeah, that's a consideration. I had assumed that – I mean, I get advertisements all the time for you can live anywhere and here's you'll have your high-speed internet. So I assumed that that was available. But I mean, hearing your comments, it's making me think I'll have to redouble and look at that more seriously.
Mostly,
I mean, I've got an online business, and quite frankly, almost anybody with an online business, you're not going to do it with dial-up. You've got to have high speed, just because, businesses now do involve video and big files, and you can't really run an internet website without, bandwidth.
Basically. Everybody that tells me that, satellite, it's awesome and it works, then if you actually ask them what they do on there, I check my emails. Oh, okay, well, that's different. I mean, again, just like Bubba said, you got to know what you need. For us, we don't have TV, so if we want to watch a video, I watch it online. And so in order to do that, I need high speed. And I don't like – I'm one of those that I'm very impatient when it comes to download times. And if I hit play, I want to watch it. I don't want to sit there and have to go get a drink, go to the bathroom, walk the dog, and then come back and see if
And someone like that, if you're using it for your entertainment system, satellite's definitely not going to work for you. It's not – the problem isn't – and there's two considerations. Number one is download speed. And most of them nowadays have – download speed of 1 gigabit. I mean, it's fast nowadays. The problem is the upload speed. And so if you're it's pretty much fixed. No matter what your download speed is, how fast it is, your upload speed's locked at 256K. And that's because the power of the transmitter, the satellite that you have here, only has so much power, and so no matter what you do, you're never going to get faster than 256K. Which, if you're uploading, like I said, files or photos or things like that, I did one recently from my in-laws, because they're on satellite, and a file that would have taken me 2 minutes from my house took an hour and 45 minutes to upload.
Yep. And the other thing is, because of the download-upload speed, and, obviously most homesteaders don't have to worry about this, but at the time I did, video games, online games, where you play games online, and I could not do any of that anymore. I had to give that up completely because
that's probably a good thing.
It was. But there's a lot of guys out there that still play that and think they're going to be able to do it on satellite, and you're not going to be able to. So.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I wish I could get my kids off the
on satellite, you'll definitely get them off.
But thanks for bringing that consideration up, because I had assumed you could pretty much get satellite anywhere. So I'll definitely start looking more closely into where internet is available and where it isn't. The report that I've written, the 7 shortcuts, it's ideally for somebody who can live anywhere. Now, there's still a lot of value in it, even if you're limited to a certain region. Like as when we first pick our first place, we had to be here because we had a business to dismantle. So You know, but yeah, and but there's so many more people are doing stuff online now, and coming up with flexible relationships with work that, or even people are looking at, hey, you know, I may be here working, but I'm going to set something up somewhere else, and travel there in a time of need.
Now, Mark,
I'd say there's a. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I have a question for you. Now, this is kind of my dilemma. And so I kind of want to get your take on this. You know, and you're probably in the same, I know you're in the same dilemma, is that we're set up.
Yeah.
Moving again requires resetting up. You can't just plant a fruit tree and it's bearing. And so, you know, moving again would require me starting over on several different levels. I mean, my garden beds are grown. I know you don't do garden beds, but my garden beds are grown, are built, and they're already producing. You know, I've got raspberries in, they're producing. I've got all my fruit trees in, they're producing. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have built up, you know, their little area that is ideal, but now are looking at something bigger, better, grass is greener on the other side, whatever, and are having to restart. What is your take on that, and how long do you think it would take to jumpstart your situation again in another spot?
Yeah, I've definitely got that same dilemma, because we are set up here, and you're right. It just, you know, people don't think, oh, this is just a chicken coop. You know, it only takes a weekend to build. Yeah, it only takes a weekend to build, but it took 2 days to get the materials here. It took a day to design it. The fact is it's built, you know, and it's working, and, it, you know, the predators aren't getting in it. We fixed all those problems, you know, so, you know, the people say, well, it's just a chicken coop, but we all know that a chicken coop is actually much more valuable than what it might seem, and everything is set up. I feel two ways about it. One is there's a lot of things I would like to redo differently. We have free range chickens here, and I would actually like to do paddocked chickens, or you know, the way I planted this particular orchard, I would actually like to plant it in a different configuration. I would actually like to live in a place where I can grow different species that I can't grow here. You know, so for me, this is my passion and my love is growing food and experimenting with that. So the challenge of a new region or the excitement of new possibilities, that excites me. The other, yeah, you're right. You know, then on the other hand, I just turned 50 and I'm thinking, I definitely don't want to build another house. You know, we don't want to build another house. We don't want to, my husband and I have been building houses everywhere we live, you know.
Well, I agree, and that's the problem. It's like, at what point, you know, at what point is it, you know, back in the old days, remember, a lot of times the homestead was passed down generation to generation, you know, and so at what point is it better to just settle with, yeah, okay, well, I would have liked to have done it different, but I didn't, so I'm just going to live with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I do know.
Can I jump in on a different point with those, with what you guys are talking about, though? And
sure.
I want to look at it from a different perspective, which is I agree with what you guys are saying. On the flip side of that, one of the things that would concern me about moving again is that you're never going to get your value out of the work that you've done when you're selling the place. Unless you're lucky,
you know,
and you find someone that's completely like-minded, no one realizes or takes into account necessarily, especially in today's market, that you've got 5 years invested in your trees, and you've got them where they're producing, and you set everything up in a specific way, and the ground has been taken care of, and so it's healthy and everything else. And to me,
that is changing. You know what? That is changing. That used to be true, that, you know, you'd buy the land, and if it was cross-fenced, well, that almost didn't. That was like sort of just an extra thing. It didn't really count for anything, you know. Or if you had a garden area, well, that was just a garden area. Or, you know, if you had fruit trees, well, there's some fruit trees. And it didn't really count as much. But that is changing. That is, and I know there's actually new realtor designations now for realtors that understand the value of these type of things and are helping people find these type of properties. So it's not yet, you know, quite the value. It's sort of like, you know, people used to always know in the real estate business, you spend $10,000 on a swimming pool, it's only going to increase the value of your house $5,000. It was always a net loss if you put a swimming pool in. And the same thing's true with your chicken coops and your fencing and your orchard trees. But and the swimming pools are not increasing value anymore. But there is a shift in the market for people who are discerning and saying, yes, I want these things, and I'm willing to pay more for it. So that's changing, and it's only been happening in the last few years. And then there's also, you know, Survival Realty, and there's specific realty places that are focusing more on bug-out locations and bug-out retreats, and that you can market in that particular way.
Yeah,
you have to be a little smarter. Yeah.
I definitely know there's specialty groups in there that will take those into consideration. And I think that's always been the case. There's, you know, there's always niche real estate agencies that target very specific categories, and so that way they can try to get the most out of the money. But I'm just talking about general market rules. Like, you're in Texas, I think you're going to be hard pressed to, unless you are marketing with those sorts of people, to get people to come in and consider those sorts of items. When we left Texas, that was a hard consideration. You know, people are just looking at what's around them and how cheaply they can get in, especially since the market's been depressed.
Yeah, I would say that would be really is up to the marketing. I mean, I don't really think we'd actually sell this place, to be honest with you, and I don't know how we'd structure getting another one. We're still thinking about where the money would come for that, but I'm not actually looking at letting this one go. We would just set up another one and keep doing the research that we've got going on here. But I've always felt that, you know, Houston, here in Texas, you know, the Texas economy has not really been affected the way the rest of the United States is. And the property market values here have, you know, they've dipped, but they're not getting hard hit like they are in other places. And so I'm saying, well, there's a Houston market. We've got all kinds of rich oil men over there. Surely they would want a place where their family would be safe, where it's already set up, you know, solar panels and well and all the stuff you need. And I think that could be marketed to them. So, we're in a turbulent time. You know, it's a mixed bag, and there's both the opportunity and you know, the crisis, of course. I have also seen, as I've traveled around, there are people that have been concerned about this kind of stuff for forever. You know, the last big wave of it was in the 70s. But you also can totally luck out and find a property that is pretty well set up. It's pretty rare, and that's definitely, you would want to already be connected into the community, and those kind of properties aren't actually going to hit the market very often. But it is, you know, there are people who have been doing this kind of stuff for a long time, especially like the regions that we're talking about, say the Ozarks or Southern Oregon or you know, even the Southern Rockies have a lot going on, or Idaho. You know, there are farms where people have already been doing this, and you can buy into it, basically. So and that's not real easy. If I'd step back for a second, I would say it's a three-step process to finding the property. And the first is to pick the region. And we talked earlier about the region of, you know, the climate and the nuclear power plants and the population and all the things you want to try to skirt or avoid. And that kind of gets you to a region that you say, okay, I probably am going to fit best in this region. Then the next thing you'd want to focus at, rather than the property, is the community. And I know the biggest mistake that most people make, and we made it too when we started out, is they say, I just want to get away from people. I want to move out to the hinterland, and we're going to do our own thing. And if it all goes to hell in a handbasket, we're going to be fine. You know. And the reality of it is, though, is that you really do need community, and you need the community around you. You don't want a huge amount of people, but the people around you are hugely important for what's going on, and most people completely overlook that. And I say the next thing, once you've found a region, you'd want to look for a community that you want to be involved with. So, you know, if you are a hippie, you want to be in a place where they're going to be doing the drumming and the yoga and the sweat lodges and stuff like that, you know. And if you're a Baptist, then you want to go to the place where they got the Baptist church and the, you know, the parties with the casseroles and you know, that kind of stuff and the gatherings. So you want to look for an area where you're going to resonate with the population. And as you start to get to know that community and you say, I want to move here, that's actually the best way to find the property is, you know, if you, let's say you are a Baptist or you're deeply religious, get to know the people in the church. Are they people you'd want to hang out with? And just start saying, I'm looking for property. And, you know, they'll come forward. You know, they'll be saying, oh, you know, so-and-so's got something that they're looking at selling. Or so I would say that that middle step of looking for the community, which is often way overlooked. And we did this, too. We moved out. You know, we got out. Moved way out into the countryside. We're 6 miles from the nearest little store. We're 25 miles from the nearest little town. You know, and my kids are just now becoming teenagers, and they want to be able to go out and buy a soda pop and hang out with their friends. Or, you know, we're like, wow, you know, we do grow a lot of our own stuff, but we do buy groceries. And, you know, it's like this, you know, you could get, to get to the Home Depot, it's at least an hour journey, you know, or, you know, building supplies. Or
exactly.
You know, the logistics, and then you're looking at, oh, my God, we're trying to be sustainable here, and how much gas are we spending? How much gas are we buying every week? And, you know, how many vehicles do we have to have? And, you know, if this whole thing really does come apart, what is this really going to look like, you know? So being closer to a small town, whether you want to be in it or how far out, is an important thing. And how far out is another big question. And I've never really driven a car. I have a visual impairment. I don't see very well, so I've never been able to get a license. So I am very acutely aware of what a pedestrian lifestyle looks like and feels like. And I've been looking for other research to authenticate or verify my own experiences. And in the Middle Ages, I was reading this wonderful book called Pillars of the Earth, which is a really greatly written book, and it's a fun story, but it also really describes the day-to-day life of living in the Middle Ages. And they had laws back then that markets needed to be separated by about 14 miles. And that way, you were never more than 7 miles away from a market center or a town. And that way, you know, 7 miles is a distance that you can walk. It takes a couple hours. You walk, get into town, you know, go to church, do your shopping, you know, do your negotiations, maybe get your horseshoe or whatever it is you need to do, and then get back home all within one day. And that 7 mile distance is a really, really good guideline for how far you want to be out of town. I spent last winter living in Southern Oregon because I wanted to experience, you know, cold, damp climate, and I was researching the calorie crops in that area. And I was 4 miles out of town, and I had a bike. And I found that to be really just a, you know, totally comfortable distance to be able to bike in and out of town on a 4 mile, you know, trip in and 4 miles out. It was a pretty easy thing to do. So anyway, the community, I would say, and how do you find that community? We can talk about that some more. But I think that's one of the things that people often overlook, and it's the biggest mistake people make is they don't realize it. You're going to need somebody, you know, you can't, as a prepper, you can't know everything, you know? Yeah, I could probably do a half-assed job at sewing you up if you chop your wood off, leg or something, and, you know, chainsaw, but it's much better if somebody else is actually a nurse and lives nearby, you know, or, you know, you stored up and somebody went crazy and they've got, you know, a whole room full of toilet paper. But they don't have any batteries or wire or something. You know, I mean, there's that natural trade thing going on as well as skills. I mean, we and humans, we're social. We're social creatures, you know. There is the birthday parties. And then there's, you know, for me, I'm like, who are my kids going to marry?
Right.
You know.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to consider, for sure.
So I would say looking at the community is another really important piece that a lot of people miss, and that actually can be the critical piece that helps you find your property a lot easier and a lot faster.
Now I'm gonna throw in. I like your rules that are there, but one that I didn't read in here that I think takes a huge play and people don't consider is tax rates. And I'm not just talking about the state tax. See, I just moved from Texas. You still live in Texas. Ron lived in Texas. And so we had no state tax. You had property tax and you have sales tax. But now I live in Iowa and I'm paying, 8 to 12% in income tax. And then you have your state tax and your property tax and everything else. And also agricultural taxes. A lot of people that get into prepping buy these properties and think, well, I'm going to have an agricultural property and so I'm going to be able to get all these breaks. But the rules change state by state. And so, you might get you might be able to write things off on your federal taxes, but even there you need to be careful because the rules are constantly changing. But you may not, what you own may not qualify for state tax breaks. So taxes, I think, can completely shift the properties you end up looking at, because the property that looks ideal at so many acres for this amount of property and everything else, you may find that when you move there, you're losing, 8 or 10% of your living because of taxes.
That's a really good point. I love Northern California. I lived in California at one point in time and owned a property and ran a business there. I will never run a business out of California ever again. They taxed so much. It was just so onerous in the paperwork. I said, I'm moving. I'm moving my business out of California because I just can't.
Right.
Way too much. So I totally get what you're talking about. Yeah. Whew, Texas, we don't have income tax, but boy, they sure get you on the property tax.
Tax, that's for sure. Yeah. And that was, it's funny that this was mentioned because I was looking down in Texas at properties, and I just happened to be while we're talking, I happened to be scanning Idaho right now, and the exact same home in Idaho was about $800 a year in taxes, and in Texas it was nearly $3,000 a year in Texas. So
and here in Texas, if you have agricultural property, you actually get a huge discount from your taxes off of that. Our taxes are incredibly low because we're running, we have a wildlife exemption. There's always different kind of rules or things you can look into. I don't know if that's in other states or not also.
And it is. That's what I'm talking about is people assume that all those state exemptions are going to be the same. But there's CRP programs. There's all kinds of programs, and they change state to state according to what that state's looking at. Up here, because we're such a farm state, there's major discounts you can get from different organizations for putting in ponds because people drain so much of the water they want it to repercolate back in, and so there's ways that you can do it, but. I've personally talked to several people that end up buying a property, moving, and then moving the following year because the tax between their property tax, their personal tax, and the exemptions they were thinking they were going to get didn't match up. That it wasn't really viable for them to live there. I agree with you. I could never live in California as much as I like Northern California. It would break me. I just couldn't afford to pay the taxes. The taxes the way they are there. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Marjorie, did we lose you?
I guess so.
And we lost Marjorie.
Okay. Well, at least we're starting a tradition here.
At least once per show. Okay. Well, I think we should probably make this a two-parter because I didn't realize that we could probably go on this topic so long.
Yeah.
So what I think we'll do, Colorado, is let's go ahead and wrap this up, and then I'll give her a call back, and I'll get her scheduled for another 20 minutes or something like that next week. How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So, guys, I think this is a very interesting topic and conversation, and the reason we can go so long on it is there are so many nuances in this. I was listening to you and Marjorie talk, and I was taking notes, and I'm just like, wow, some of that stuff I wouldn't even have considered.
Well, yeah. And that's the beauty of talking with people that have different needs or concerns, that they may be your needs and concerns, but they're not actually at the top of your list, for instance. And so, you know, like she's talked about where she hasn't been able to drive, and so walking distance is kind of important to her. And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. I don't walk, but my kids do. And so, you know, it's kind of nice here because the kids can walk to the library. You know, it's a couple miles away, but they walk to the library 2-3 times a week. You know, if I live out in the country, what are they going to do? You know, if I live too far out, you know, and they can't walk anywhere. So yeah, everybody has these different takes on things, and that's why it's fun to talk with, especially with all three of us, because we're all three live completely different lives and have completely different priorities.
Yeah, I think the other thing that she said that kind of caught me off guard, and I would have never considered it, it was, who would my daughter marry?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like such a silly thing to say, and I'm like, but it's you know something? Moving out in the middle of nowhere, I mean, I've had this fantasy of moving out in the middle of Alaska for years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've driven through there several times. I love it. And you can get all these remote camps, you know, on these islands and things like that. And I was like, wow, that would just be so cool to go do it. Yeah. But at a certain point you have to think, yeah, but even though you might enjoy it, what about your kids?
Right.
And how much physical how much contact are they going to have with other people, and how much are you limiting them, you know, in their future by going so remote?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, there's so many things to consider, and that's being a huge one, you know, to consider there.
All right. Well, we need to wrap this puppy. We're at coming up on our 2-hour mark. So
okay.
Next week, Colorado, we'll be talking to Charles Sanders. He's an old friend. We've talked to him several times on the show. And we'll be talking about you know, what you can do to prepare for spring. And we'll give Marjorie a call and see if we can get another 30 minutes in with her on this topic. And what I'll try to do is talk to her this afternoon and pick a specific target on the topic. And that way we can announce it and people know what we're going to be talking about.
Awesome. That works.
All right. Why don't you tell people where they can get a hold of you on Facebook?
They can find me at facebook.com/ColoradoRonPage.
All right. And for Backwoods Home, it's the same thing, but Backwoods Home Mag. You can also find the Self-Reliance Expo at Self-Reliance Expo and Bubba Da Vinci at Bubba Da Vinci. Additionally, you can find out more information about our sponsor, Backwoods Home Magazine, at www.backwoodshome.com. And keep looking at our dates for the Self-Reliance Expo. We're always updating information on there. That's www.selfreliancexpo.com. All right, that's it. Hey, we're going to roll, since that was a long episode, I'm going to go ahead and roll out with our Real Men of Genius. And
yeah.
This is a great one this week, guys. And from there, we'll just roll straight to our close. You guys have a good week, and you take care, Colorado.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Centerfold Retoucher.
Mr. Centerfold Retoucher.
Your incredible talent takes gorgeous women and somehow makes them gorgeouser.
A mucho gorgeoso.
Breasts bigger, moles smaller, mustaches gone.
You're a star.
Thanks to you, hot wax is a thing of the past, and working out is for suckers.
Ancient history.
Any artist can say their work is in a gallery, but how many can say their work is stuffed under mattresses around the world?
You're gonna go blind.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, oh Da Vinci of the derriere, because thanks to you, we can enjoy real beauty the way we like it. Completely fake. Bud Light beer, Anheuser-Busch.
That's our show for this week. Next week, we will be back on with Colorado Ron. And like always, we'll cover the main topics from Backwoods Home Magazine and whatever the current topics are out there. Go ahead and give you some information on how you can get a hold of us. You can get back with www.backwoodshome.com to check out Backwoods Home Magazine and place your orders. If you want information on the Self-Reliance Expo, as always, www.selfreliancexpo.com. Facebook pages. Facebook /Backwoods Home Mag will get you to Backwoods Home Magazine's Facebook page. Self-Reliance Expo will get you to Self-Reliance Expo's page. Bubba Da Vinci will get you to my page, and Colorado Ron Page will take you to Colorado Ron's page. Thank you very much for joining us this week. Guys, please go out there and pay attention to what's going on with the administration and your gun rights. Do whatever you can do. Once you lose them, you can't get them back. So take care, and we will talk to you next week.
We're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks